Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the writer and producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
My name's Dylan. My pronouns are he, they, and I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring the Modron.
The Monster Manual describes Modrons as beings of absolute law that adhere to a hive-like hierarchy. They inhabit the plane of Mechanus and tend its eternally revolving gears, their existence a clockwork routine of perfect order.
Good afternoon, fellow automaton.
We are joined by Jeff Stormer. Jeff is an award-winning podcaster and game designer living in Philadelphia. His podcasting experience began in 2015 with Party of One, a still-running TTRPG actual play podcast focused on two-player role-playing experiences. He has additionally co-produced shows, including All My Fantasy Children and Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast, which won Best of the Best in Fiction Podcasting at the 2022 New Jersey Web Fest. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hello, I am beyond excited to be here. I am thrilled to be sitting down with y'all today. This is going to be such a wonderful episode. Thank you for having me on the show.
I am thrilled about this. Well, you know what? Honestly, I owe you. You have graciously had me on your show twice, so this is payback.
I'm excited.
That's how the show works.
This is your penance.
All previous guests, you owe us now.
That's right. A deal has been made. A precedent established.
Middle of season 4, setting precedent.
Yeah, that's retroactive.
That's how it goes. We're talking about one of the weird ones. Like, there is no basis for this outside of D&D. So for the audience, Jeff, what's a Modron?
So the Modrons are, and I'm glad that you mentioned that there's no basis for this outside of Dungeons and Dragons, because that is a thing that I genuinely want to talk about. It's part of what makes this a fascinating monster for me. But the Modrons are the elemental beings from the plane of law, which is already a sentence that, like, does not make sense outside of the context of the game Dungeons & Dragons. It's the idea that law is such a profound, like, thing that it has its own, like, elemental plane. Modrons are the elemental being from the plane of law. They are the living apparati of the god Primus, which is the god of law and order. Also, I believe Mechanus in some editions. It's either Primus or Mechanus, depending on the edition you're looking at. But the idea is they are the embodiment of law and order. They are living machines that are part of one collective hive mind that operates solely on an existence of law and order. Everything in their existence. So the way that they are physically expressed as part of this broad existence is they are geometric shapes that are living machines. So you have monodrones, which are sort of orbs. You have duodrones, tridrones, quadrones, pentadrones. That goes, and the numbers increase, the sizes increase, and they all act in unison. They are a hive mind entity, and they serve Mechanus or Primus as it, like, rotates, and when it completes a 278-year rotation, they go on a march throughout the entire cosmos, just marching, notably in, like, a particular straight line, which will demolish anything in its path because there are millions of them walking in a straight line, and the rest of the multiverse just kind of has to make way for them. Like, you're in the game. Do y'all remember the N64 game Blast Corps, where you were, like, driving vehicles and there was a truck with a bomb on it and you have to, like, move stuff around it? That's essentially the March of the Modrons.
There are times where you can tell two bits of D&D lore were written on different days by different people. That number, 289, is like a third of an elf's lifespan. Any given elf should have seen this happen twice, at least.
Again?
Crap.
Oh, fuck. The roundy guys are coming.
It's like the cicadas, right? Like, it's like, oh, well.
Yeah.
If they were doing, like, a exploration or...
It's a parade.
But it's a parade that causes utter chaos everywhere it goes because it is unyielding, which is odd from the lawful people that their parade would cause chaos everywhere it goes.
That should be a prime number, right? Like, it should be a prime number of years that they march on.
It is 17 squared. It is a perfect square of primes.
All right, that's fair. All right, I accept a perfect square.
One of the things that's interesting to me is all of them are named whatever number drone in 5th edition, which is a holdover. These are from Monster Manual 2 in 1st edition. They're one of the oldest creatures. Again, a baffling turn of events given what they are, that this was one of the first ideas that needed to be put on paper.
We'll get to it, but I do have, like, a theory that pulls on a lot of things as to what led to this very strange thing taking place.
In the 5th edition book, we have the drones. Like, they're very specifically minions. There's an entire extra chunk of Modrons that 5th edition players generally aren't going to know about because they've never come up, because why would they? But they count back down. There are 15 layers of Modron. There are 5 drones. And then it's something like Decone, Nonone, Octone, or something like that. I can't remember what the suffix is. All the way down to Secundus. And Secundus is the last layer of Modrons before Primus, the one in the prime. Which, again, to come back to our math thing, the title for the god is Primus, the one in the prime. But one is not a prime. They're wrong. They're lying.
This was made how we want them to be made. They have a place where they live, where it makes sense in their vast numbers, where they can all be, because it's a whole giant mechanized planet. There is a hierarchy. There is an order. There is an ecology, if you will. They have a clear motivation. You know why you want to interact with them. It's a different encounter than most encounters are going to be. Check, 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 check. There's a couple creepy things about them. The absolute hierarchy is creepy. Modrons communicate only with their own rank and the ranks immediately above and below them. Modrons more than one rank away are either too advanced or too simple for them to understand. So they literally cannot communicate past the rank above and below them. There's no way for them to. If you left two of them in a room, they would not be able to functionally work with each other.
I went through so many random sources because these are such a fascinating, weird look. There's so much information on Modrons, despite the fact that, again, I don't see them ever come up anywhere.
Because there is so much about them, like lore. There is so much lore about this creature. It is difficult to imagine where you would even put it, because it's suddenly like, all right, I have to figure out like where I'm going to insert this. Now I got to figure out how they communicate with each other. Like you have to, you're basically, if you're not doing an exclusively Modron thing,
how'd they get there?
What are you even like? It's so complicated.
Here's my idea, and it's real simple. They all have different jobs, right? Make a couple of them into antibodies. If there's too much chaos, they pop in and unchaos it. And that's a perfect thing to do to your sorcerer, your wild magic sorcerer. Maybe four levels in, when they start to cast third level spells and there's a wild magic surge, and all of a sudden a couple Modrons pop up. Maybe not hostile, just there to fix some of the problems and then pop away again. It could be little things like that. I just like the idea that they exist somewhere in the universe. It might not be a main campaign thing. You're just going to occasionally bump into them. And should you wish to follow them, I guess, you can go and play on Clock Planet.
Lead you down the whole rabbit hole.
Yeah.
My theory as to why they exist to begin with, and this is why I find them fascinating, because as you mentioned, Dylan, like, they are a monster that is true to Dungeons & Dragons, and that vein of creation is the most interesting to me. You've covered on the show, there's a lot of monsters that are from myth, from movies, from other things, and then there's this one vein of monster that is entirely born out of the game Dungeons & Dragons. A lot of them were specifically because players in the 70s bought crappy little plastic figurines and were like, well, this is an owlbear. Fuck it. That's owlbear now. We're good. We're done.
I love that. They bought some random, cheap 99-cent bag of plastic monsters and then just assigned traits to whatever they found. I love that.
Like, that's my theory in a nutshell, and why they pop up so early and why they are so, like, immediately fleshed out is because if you are running this game, if you imagine yourself in the 70s and you are running this game, you are just dropping in tiny little plastic figurines and going, like, that's a monster, these are its stats. If you happen to run out of figurines, there's a thing already on the table that has a specific number of geometric sides that you can just put on the table. It's sized the same size as your little figurines. It's sized the same size as your pewter minis. And you go, that's a law monster. It's got four sides. It's the weakest of them. This is the 20-sided law monster. It's the most complicated.
I am a little upset to say that I did not make the connection to the dice until right now, until this very moment.
That was the first thing that jumped out at me. And you find out as you're going through it, like, unless Jeff is correct, everything in the lore specifically starts to try to steer away from that in a very interesting way to me, because it seems like, how to phrase this in a way that doesn't just make me sound insane.
Good luck.
The thing is, like, talking about any of this kind of makes it sound like you're a conspiracy theorist.
It's madness. The complexity of Modron shapes increases as a function of rank. If you get into the hierarchs, the upper tier where you start counting down again, they start looking progressively more and more human, which makes it look not like a dice problem, but a fitting problem. If you only have like one free parameter, if you can only assign one thing to measure what a shape looks like, you can only make a sphere. So if you were just to say, like, I need a thing to sit in this space, it's a ball of radius, whatever. And then the shape gets slightly more complicated and slightly more complicated. And you add more faces and more polygons and you can start rendering a little bit. So by the time you get to these upper level creatures, they start looking like humanoids. Except, again, for whatever reason, they cut off hard at just the drones. It's almost like, they introduced devils and only ever gave you an imp stat block. It's just an odd choice.
And it's interesting that, like, a lot of the ideas around the more elaborate, you know, more human-esque, the sort of rendering-inspired Modron lore, like, it's interesting to watch it as a lot of that comes later, like, to see that come over generation and edition and edition as, like, very literally, like, computer programming is becoming a thing, and you're starting to see people be like, oh, well, this would make sense if you went up to this number, eventually you'd have more control. It's fascinating to see how that interacts with this idea of, like, these are polygonal shapes, and then seeing the conception of what you can do with a polygonal shape start to change as people's awareness of what you can make with polygons expands over generations amidst the technical boom.
We've been approaching this one so far entirely, like, outside designer facing, or like how we come up with these, just generally how fucking weird they are, quite frankly.
Yeah.
They're such an odd choice.
That's a weird little monster.
You had specifically a pitch for these things, and I feel like it's too good to warrant a segue. I just want to give you a platform. Jeff, tell me what you think about Modrons.
I have a problem with Modrons, and my problem with Modrons is largely my problem with Dungeons and Dragons as a thing. Like, there's a lot of my feelings about Dungeons and Dragons tied to my feelings about Modrons. Modrons, as they are listed in the Monster Manual of every edition, are always the epitome of law. Once the alignment grid goes from law, neutral, chaos to, you know, the 9-panel grid, they are immediately placed in lawful neutral. They are the embodiment of, they do not comprehend good or evil, and they are the epitome of law and nothing else. Now, how that is expressed, and I'm going to break down the things about Modrons that we have already stated on this episode. They are a group that is obsessed with extremely rigid hierarchies that are impossible to break out of. It is stated in almost every edition that there are, like, rogue Modrons that go chaotic, and they are immediately ostracized and banished from the dimension. Outsiders are banished. They are kept out of the order.
In 5th edition, they changed it. There is a rogue Modron box out. They are not ostracized. They are destroyed.
Oh, that's worse!
Just to feed in.
For a split fucking second there, I thought you were gonna go, no, they're welcome.
The Monster Manual has never fixed anything.
I honestly thought you were gonna tell me they did. Okay, fuck it. All right, I'm sorry. Jeff, please continue.
Thank you, Dylan. You've made it worse. They ostracize or destroy outsiders that do not conform to their strict, rigid hierarchies. They are obsessed with military strength. They demonstrate this through elaborate displays such as military parades. That's fascism. What you are very, like, explicitly describing, and the idea that you would place that as the epitome of lawful neutral, is a problem. Like, that is a broken design.
It also feeds back into something you mentioned, something, Aram, you called out the incoherence of, but the moment you add that fascistic context to Modrons, the idea that the Great March creates chaos is wrong. It doesn't create chaos. The Great March is order, and the chaos arises from the fact that no one else is in the same order. That misalignment, that chaos, is not the Modrons creating chaos. That's a failure on the part of the outsider to not conform to the expectation of a Modron's view of order.
That's very literally what it is. And, like, this is, it's one of those things where all of the lore is so, like, it's so pointed in that direction that, like, it feels like it has to be obvious, but then it raises the question of, like, why is that your definition of lawful neutral? Or it's just something that they laid all of this out, playing with the idea of what the furthest picture of law looks like, stumbled into a fascism and did not piece it together. And, like, neither option is great, but both options are something that, like, feels like it needs to be reworked once you kind of stop and give it that genuine moment of thought of, like, oh, hey, we made fascists. All right, we should probably think about this for a second.
There is something inherently horrific about the idea of cute little beep boop
fascists, but I don't like it. I mean, beyond the thought thing, I don't want to play it. I don't want to play with a bunch of little robot fascists. What I want to play with is a bunch of little robots who are obsessed with trying to repair chaos adorably. That's fun.
The Modron that I want to play with is very much a, like, we are in a world where rule, where the, like, the rules are paper thin and we are the expression of that rule, is very fun to me. And, like, I don't know if you don't need to go full fascist to get to that point.
I think you can also adapt some of that as well. Like, the mainframe might be a fascist nightmare, like in Tron. But the individual little robots, the guys further down the chain, the guys that can't even talk to their own supreme leader because the language barrier is so extreme. That's just a Roomba. That's just a little guy who wants to get out there and clean up some chaos. So your players aren't necessarily meeting the mainframes. They're not meeting the palace guards. They're meeting the Roombas.
And then that opens up like a really wonderful kind. I mean, that like a wonderful-ish, right? wonderful and then the mash, I'm going to laugh so I don't cry way of like, there's a metaphor there for living in fascist times, right? And you have this idea, you open up this possibility of like, the most people are the ones that can communicate with each other that exist in a place where they look at the person in the highest degree of power and go, I don't comprehend you. Like, we do not exist in the same manner of thought. Then you get into a very fruitful fantasy or like expression there that I think like humanizes, that like introduces like an element of human tragedy, if that is something that you would want to explore, with this idea of like, these are, making the metaphor explicit, these are working class people living under the reign of a fascist, and like, what does that look like? And that ties into that idea of like the rogue Modron. Like, what does it mean to rebel against this system? And you know, how does that spread? Like, that's paranoia is what that is. And there's a genuinely joyful paranoia game in a bunch of Modrons that are like, hey, this is fucked, right?
Are we the baddies?
You have this perfect Primus, the god of law, the god of this is the way it should be. But every layer, in terms of power, in terms of competency, in terms of everything, is just divide by two. And by the time you get down 15 layers, it's just dumb. They're not good at anything. They don't know how to follow any orders.
Well, they're task-oriented, right? Like, these guys are cleaners. They are tasked for cleaning. If they do anything else, they're hapless.
But now you have an entire plane that, if you were to go to Mechanus, is likely terrifying, is completely rigid and orderly. But the only ones allowed to go out are the Modrons, and at this point you have Galactus trying to conquer the world via Roomba.
Right!
That's funny.
That's fucking fantastic.
It's always something that I think is a struggle, is like, how do you convey that there is like a broader multiverse of stuff happening, and just periodically having the street sweeper show up to be like, hey, fireball happened, we're gonna sweep this up. Like, that's a fun, because then that introduces that, you could introduce that very early in a game and have somebody go, oh wow, there really is a multiverse, and these are just the magical beings that like are the antibodies cleaning things up along the way.
It serves a couple purposes here. One, like, even if like there's the side of light and the side of darkness, you're battling it out, these two very, you know, balanced sides, trying to fight past this line, and then all of a sudden just a bunch of street sweepers show up and start fucking with, you know, things. Or if things get really bad, maybe more impressive Modrons show up. And both sides have to deal with this. Like, there's no negotiating. They're not going to understand what we're doing. They don't care. They're just here to fix the chaos, and you just have to kind of deal with them. And if you attack them, they send more. Like, they never stop sending more. So it's never the option to fight them, because you're just screwed afterwards, you know, because they'll just keep coming.
It also puts the lie to what they are. Because if they were fundamentally opposed to chaos, they wouldn't be wandering around, like, doing random marches. The Blood War wouldn't exist.
I'm sorry, what's the Blood War? I must have missed that.
The Blood War is in the Infernal Plains where the demons and devils are constantly at war with each other, where initially it was heaven and the abyss at war, and then some of the angels get corrupted. That's your first devils. And then the devils basically continued fighting the abyss for the rest of eternity.
Right. Okay. Yes.
If the Modrons exist and are fundamentally opposed to all chaos,
why aren't they there doing something?
Modrons should be in the armies of hell.
Or at least cleaning up.
They aren't aligned to evil. They don't interact with that axis whatsoever. So all they should see is beings of law fighting beings of chaos, and they should have taken a side.
We'd have to understand the philosophy of this central character that runs everything. Yeah. Is that clear at all in the lore?
No.
Right, of course not.
No, it's a being of pure law, and it's a god, and it does what gods do.
Right.
It is telling that the idea of law is tying it to we are showing up to kill things, to smash things, like we are an army that shows up to fight things, and that is the embodiment of law. And that can also be medics. Like, that can be literally, like, restoration crews. And, you know, this idea that, like, the beings of law is literally, like, restoring the way that life was in the moments before this sort of whatever the form of this chaotic excursion happened, right? Like, something happened to massively on such a scale that the plane of law took notice, disrupt a point in the multiverse. That opens up a lot of interesting possibilities of just, like, what that could look like in terms of, like, that is also first responders and medical crews and all sorts of other things that reflects this idea of what it means to bring something back to its natural state. Like, that's not always going to be. And if you truly, like, see this logic of this is the law, this is the order, this is the way that the universe is, you take that to a place of, like, hey, if a multiversal being, if a slod showed up and spit acid on a village and is this entity of the planes of chaos, there should probably be a village there, and then Modrons can show up to kind of be the people to put that village back in place, because, hey, this wasn't supposed to happen. And there's something almost beautiful in that almost gets back to the idea that they are, like, the neutral entity, right? Like, there's times where they're carrying weapons, and then there's times where they are carrying, you know, restoration supplies.
But entropy has to happen in order for...
No, it doesn't.
What do you mean?
Aram, thermodynamics doesn't exist. If magic exists, entropy does not have to exist.
No, okay, look. For a world to work, death has to happen. Things have to continue on. Nations have to fall. Things have to rise. New must be born, right? So there has to be some sort of philosophy this main god would have in order for the rest of the world to work. Because if this main god was simply undoing everything everyone does, he would have been destroyed by now, because the other gods would have been like, hey, asshole, stop it. Get in your lane. Pick a lane, pick a struggle. Don't fight every single amount of change that happens. So what would the philosophy be born from that allows them to function within this idea that they're restoring order, but still in a limited enough framework that they're allowed to do it?
It's the grand sort of paradox of it is law and order are these weird concepts where if you talk about the universe, then you would talk about the way it's supposed to be. But, like, in your sort of planar lore, again, depending on which fucking book you want to look into, angels and demons are the only, like, in the outer planes, fundamentals. Like, devils were a corruption, and God knows where the fucking slods came from, but, like, there was inherently chaos. So are the Modrons there to enforce law and the obliteration of chaos, or are they there to enforce order and the way things are supposed to be, which implies a given value of chaos? It's like, there are forces of chaos, and they'll keep increasing the chaos, and we just need to make sure that we sit somewhere near zero. We'll fix some stuff, and we won't fix other stuff, and it's just going to be random number generator, giant Monte Carlo simulation in the sky.
Dylan, you got at something that is very true to the nature of, like, introducing magic into stories in general, is why does Mr. Fantastic never stop world hunger? It's this idea that, like, you have introduced a magical element. How does it apply to all of these other things? And this idea of there is an external force that largely exists to, you know, keep that impossibility in check, because that is, to me, an interesting thing that, like, again, it's not going to come up often, but it comes up in that sense of, like, an impossible thing just occurred. This is the otherworldly entity that addresses that impossibility so that the strings of reality don't untether around us in this moment. Like, that, to me, is a compelling... It's that idea of enforcing thermodynamics in a world where magic exists is like an incredibly compelling angle that adds a lot to the fantasy of role-playing games through the use of this silly otherworldly street sweeper.
Are Modrons monsters?
As written, absolutely. As written, they are fascists, and so yes. Like unreservedly. But I think that to our conversation, they don't have to be. In theory, I see them as no more of a monster than thermodynamics. I think that thermodynamics is a good point of reference, or relativity, or like any other force of nature. They are an embodiment of... Like, they are the epitome of a naturally occurring thing. And in a world of impossibility that takes the form of cute little fiddly robots?
Cute little geometry buddies.
I mean, okay, they're the embodiment of a thing, right? But, like, gravity doesn't throw a parade.
What do you think rain is?
The idea of an entity that is the embodiment of... We live in a world with, like, laws. I don't think that could be considered a monstrous thing. As written, they are little tiny robot fascists, and that is a horrifying, awful thing.
At the most fundamental level, these are things that cannot do anything but follow their directives. What happens when that directive is the impossibility you're trying to fix? If I say, take 5 steps, turn to the left, and then you'll get to your target, and when you're there, repair the damaged house. Except the Modron tries to do that, but somebody left their cart in the middle of the road because the wheel broke, so they're in the middle of trying to fix this, and there's just a farmer staring at this weird little sphere that's ramming its face into the back of the trailer as it just goes, "Do you need help?" And then it turns, and it winds up in the middle of a fucking field where there is no house. Now what?
It's like with, like, any robot, right? If you can logic them out of their loop, then you win, and you can reset them, or their head explodes, or whatever.
They do have a trait called disintegration. If the monodrone dies, its body disintegrates into dust, leaving behind its weapon and anything else it was carrying. So I do kind of like the idea of, like, just cracking its code, and then it just combusts.
If they disintegrate into dust, I want that dust to do something. I love magic dust.
Magic dust is great.
Magic dust is good.
It should work as a mending spell.
No, it should be the fundamental ingredient in sovereign glue.
Ooh, that's good.
See, I was going to say it's a natural counter spell. Is you get to undo a magical effect.
That's good too.
That's really powerful. And it would encourage your players to kill a lot of Motrons.
It would. And you know what? If you found a way in your game to encourage the players to kill fascists, do it.
Yeah, okay. If you're playing them as endless fascists and now you're just, like, mining them for spell components where you're just killing an endless stream of them as they keep replicating, yes, but that sounds horrific and nothing I want to do. I like it much better if it's a very mild effect. So,
yeah.
You know, it's helpful, but you're not encouraged to go mine them.
That's fair.
That ties into what we were saying about, like, if you could play them as, like, this repairs a thing. Like, this repairs a mundane object that has been broken to restore it to a state where it functions again.
Which is the last bit of this. How would you change the Modrons as presented in 5th edition?
I would cast them as... the cosmos's first responders. I mean, I love an X-File. I love a good investigating an anomaly, right? Like, that to me is the epitome of, like, what you could make a Modron is, like, an impossible thing has occurred. This is the thing that naturally appears to, like, to address it in whatever, like, magical, military, or interpersonal way that is addressed. Like, there's an episode of, it comes up once because it is the weirdest possible way that they could have addressed this, but there's an episode of Doctor Who in the Ninth Doctor run where they address that if you make a paradox, space vultures emerge and start eating people. And it's like, that's the weirdest answer to the question of what happens if you make a paradox imaginable.
I kind of love it, though, because sometimes there are times where, as a DM, players have gone off into the whole, like, well, what if I do this? Well, what if this happens? What if I line up all of these effects that clearly there is no natural way that this would occur? This is not something that a character in the world would do. This is something that a player would have to consciously go about doing to fuck with me. Then my answer to that is just, well, fuck off. I wouldn't deal with that.
Yeah.
What happens if I manage to create a time paradox? There's no spell that lets you go back in time. But what if I manage to use, like, an empowered time stop and I combine that with stepping into a bag of holding while someone dimension doored me out of it? Then space vultures would come out and eat you. Fuck off.
Space vultures, yeah.
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan! Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean, moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff.
She's a bit clumsy.
Okay, so that makes sense. Sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled. Everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set. The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay, this better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DM's notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
Aram, I'm going to constrain you just a little bit. The room is dark. There is a lighting source. It's tenuous. It's weak. It could be, you know, a handful of candles kind of around a room with a bit of a draft. It could be a slight magical glow from your own spell work, something you have etched in the ground, whatever. I want to know, is this a desperation move somewhere you shouldn't be? Or is this something you planned out and are doing in a secure location?
This is something I have planned out. This is not, I'm not a desperate person. I'm a lazy person, but I'm not a desperate person.
No, of course not. So in that case, where is the place that you know you will not be disturbed when you reach out to something that may be a more rigorous individual would think, don't talk to that.
I really like the idea of a tower. There's got to be a tower somewhere that is either abandoned or just not well used. Perhaps it was like on the border. I am a high elf. You know what I mean? Our borders are old.
You'd always love putting things around Waterdeep for some godforsaken reason.
Love Waterdeep.
That's on the coast. There was a big fucking storm. And this little windmill, it had a handful of small grain farms that were feeding it. But the storm came in, it wrecked the turbine-y bit. I don't know what windmill parts are called. I'm not Dutch.
The spinny bit, technical term.
The spinny bit got fucked. It's basically they just didn't have it in them to get it repaired. So now this has been repurposed as your wizard's tower.
Yes, I like that. I like that quite a lot, actually. Okay, perfect.
So you're like just far enough outside of the city, the sort of territory where if you were talking to someone in Waterdeep, they'd go, yeah, that's well outside the city. And if you talk to anyone from anywhere else in the world, they're like, yeah, that's Waterdeep.
Technically, I'm here surveying the damage.
Actually, that's the analogy I'm going to go with is you're basically in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
If you talk to anyone else in the world, that's Detroit. But if you're from around Detroit, you're like, no, it's not. That's clearly outside Detroit.
It's definitely not Detroit.
Tell me what this ritual looks like.
What's the problem I'm trying to solve? Now, my character is very lazy, so I'm assuming it's labor. So there is labor I need to solve, and I think that labor is putting this town back into some serviceable order for the kingdom. That is my task. I'm supposed to come here, assess, and hire people. But the less money I spend, the more I can pocket.
Is it legitimately just like, this isn't even like your wizard tower? The job was get this producing again. And your immediate response was, well, I could pay someone to fix it, or I could summon an otherworldly entity to do it for me.
I'm government middle management. I'm looking to skim off the top.
Fair enough. Perfect. Then tell me where you are in the tower, what your little ritual looks like.
I'm at the top of it, because all magic is done at the top of a tower. At least all summoning magic is. I know a little bit about, like, we've seen these creatures pop in and repair things. They just do it randomly. It happens throughout this world. We've all, you know, anyone involved in magic at all has at least studied these creatures, perhaps some of their dust. And I've been convinced that if we could just find a way to point them
where we want to point them, they could get so much done, and they do seem to enjoy it so. And if we could just harness that a tad for us and, you know, for them, I think it would be beneficial to both sides. So I have been scrounging some of this dust wherever I can get it, like little bits out of the lab, you know, I'll just sneak a test tube here and there. And I am now making what, I mean, do I have an answer? No, but I have a theory that if I was to form some sort of magic circle with this dust, that perhaps might call one forth.
So you've effectively just gone around finding a bunch of Modron ashes.
Finding is a bit of... Yes, yes. No, no. Finding works fine. Yes.
Roll me Arcana.
That is going to be a 12 plus 4 is 16.
That's pretty decent. You don't have any level of formal magical education, but you've seen summoning circles.
Well, I have formal education in as much as, like, in high elf, you know, like... high school, you would all have to take electives and get to a certain level of magical, you know, but like, we have some.
You were trained to use cantrips and shit, though. Like, this is, that's like me saying, well, you don't...
I have studied a bit on my own.
This is like you trying to pull off group theory, working entirely off of grade 10 math.
Everything in my life has always been handed to me, including my magic. I'm a sorcerer. Where everyone else was studying and working hard, I simply...
You were learning the blade.
Yes, I was learning the blade. I was just powerful. And as I grew older, I got more powerful.
So you have basically just taken the fundamental thing that you remember from every summoning circle you know of, which is that magic shit, geometry.
Magic, circle, dust. Check, check, check.
What is your intention for powering this?
I'm mainly like water and ice magic, right? But I do have vortex warp. So I figure perhaps vortex warp could, the energies of it maybe could open up a portal of some sort. That was my general idea that I formed right now because I hadn't thought about this until you asked me. The other option I have is that I have a cloak that is magical and an immovable rod, neither of which I think would help at all in this situation.
I really like the idea of you sitting in this random fucking geometrical assortment of corpse dust with a fucking stick and a cape sitting in front of you.
You know what he likes to do? He hates to sit on the ground. Very, very dirty. So he'll just like... you'll lock the rod in place right around where like a chair might be and then just kind of stoop on it so he doesn't have to touch the ground.
Stooping on it, staring at this cape going.
I don't want to cut it. It does look lovely on me. I do like those colors.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say it is the dead of summer. It is one of the hottest nights in a very long time. And you have taken a big pile of effectively metal filings and magical energy and put them at the top of a very tall object.
Yes, I am.
Roll me a dex save as you nearly get hit by lightning. Sometimes the players pitch you like six ideas that without an approach and you're just like, no, you know what? The gods are gonna do it then.
That is going to be a natural one. So I'm starting off really strong here.
You fly backwards from the lightning. And nothing seems to have happened. The lightning struck the circle. It is completely left alone. And then you hear it ringing from the bottom. The door is knocking at the bottom of this tower.
Am I injured?
You're very lucky because you're going to take 3 points of lightning damage because I rolled three ones.
Wow.
On 3d6, because I'm pretty sure that's what call lightning does.
Yeah, like I really expected that to be quite worse.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be worse.
Barely even singed my dress.
And yes. Then you hear this knock. You like got tossed back, landed with your head like hanging over the edge of the stairs, and you just are looking at the door.
Coming! And she She would get up and find a mirror and straighten herself up real quick. I'm coming, coming! As the knocking is continuing, she runs down the spiral stairs to the bottom level. And I would open the door. Hello, may I help you?
Yes, hello, my name is 390625. I believe that you were in reports of, I'm sorry, am I taking up any more of your time? I don't.
No, 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 this is quite fine. She's startled, but this is the result she wanted. So, no, no, please, please come right in.
This is not one of the smaller Modrons. This is a pentadrone. So this is a five-sided object. This is essentially like a 10-sided dice with spindly little arms holding a notepad and a pen, looking at you with like a big, big single eye blinking at you.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to take up any more of your time than I need to, but it says here that we are due for an inspection of... Does this say, summoning circle maintenance?
Yes, yes. It's right upstairs.
And I think, like, starts walking around, taking books off of shelves, starts rearranging a bookshelf in, like, a way that does not alphabetical, and you cannot tell what the order is.
This is all out of order.
No. Do what you need. Whenever she's talking to you, it's all smiles and joy, and the second your back's to her, it's like tented fingers and...
We should probably... Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and look at the, let's go ahead and look at the summoning circle. I think that's the thing to do.
Right this way.
So here's the thing. A pentadrone looks almost like if you picture a D10, and then at the bottom you just unravel the sides and let them sort of float out like tentacles.
Like a flump?
You have a monster manual, Rom. Look it up. It doesn't look like a flump. Nothing looks like a flump.
I'm sorry. Jeez.
How dare you bring up flumps in front of me again? Flumphrey's dead. All flumps are dead. It's over now. They don't come up again.
God, they're freakier than I... You know, they're always freakier than I think they're going to be.
So like I said, you can see what I'm talking about, where it's like if you took the D10 and then just made the sides float almost like a starfish... It's got a face on all the sides. So you do this thing where you go tented fingers. It is looking at you
its
while
mouths,
you do this.
And it is grabbing things with its mouths and leaving like slobber, but like metallic robot slobber. So like oil slicks on various books as it rearranges things.
This isn't quite optimal, but okay. How about we just go to the circle? Like gently pushing you.
Let's go look at the circle.
As you get to like the upper area, she throws open windows so that you can very clearly see all the destruction all around. Here's the circle right here.
Yes, wonderful circle, wonderful. This is a fabulous looking circle. This is truly, you know, you look like you're someone who really, really knows this stuff. Can I just say that?
Thank you, I do.
Jeff, when series of numbers that I did not parse at all when you said them, you get up there and you look at this, and you're right. To the Modron brain, it immediately just hits. It is perfect. The lines are precise. The corners are at good angles. And you know inherently there is nothing magical about any bit of this pattern. It's just, it is immaculate. As you say, it is perfect. It's like fucking Modron crack, but it's just the geometry of it. Mm-hmm.
I thought I would be using this to summon them, but apparently not. Apparently it has called them. My plan now is to try and trick the Modron into entering the circle and try and trap him within it, to force him to call others to do my bidding.
It's good to know what your intentions are.
Yes.
This is helpful. This is helpful for my very specific Modron.
Okay, excellent.
You seem like someone that really knows their magic. Can I say that? Can I say that as a peer and as an entity of the Order of Law? You seem like someone that really knows their magic.
I am just touched. I could give you a demonstration.
The angles on this are outstanding.
Like, I think it like crouches down and kind of like, and it does this thing. Like, it runs its hands along the very edges of the summoning circle. The lines on here are outstanding. Oh my! I'm so sorry. Scuffed it. I am so sorry. And you watch it scuff, and then the dust rearranges into a perfect circle.
Modron dust will form itself into a perfect geometric circle, but the only way that you would get that is by, killing a bunch of Modrons and lying them out here. And I don't want to apply it, because that was outstanding. Yes, yes, yes. I mean, I know that, you know...
The acoustics are best from the dead center of the circle. I think you'll truly see.
You know, my Quadrone and I, you know, she is always telling me that I've got to hear the true acoustics if I really want to experience them. Let me step right into the center of this.
And I think, eys it again and, like, starts to step and, two of its, all of its eyes kind of, like, seize up into that perfect D10 shape for a second and goes...
Wait a second. One more thing. You know, there were some unusual events recently. I feel, actually, while I'm here, I should probably talk to you about them.
Sure, I'd happily share what I know.
Some magical occurrences occurred recently. You know, somebody put a bag of holding inside of a portable hole and it turned into a whole thing. Usually, some monodrones would come and clean this whole thing up, but, we have not seen them back at HQ recently, back in the order, back in the plane of Mechanus.
Oh, no.
But they were supposedly around this area. I should probably be asking. You wouldn't happen to know someone to ask about this, would you?
Well, I am in charge of this area. Unfortunately, I just arrived this morning, and I'm trying to take full note of everything that's happening. This was my first step in establishing a bit of order amongst all this chaos.
Of course, I do appreciate it. I don't want to take up any. Let me hear this acoustics, and then we'll figure out what the best way to clean up this, maintain this circle is.
And, like, goes to almost take a step, and that's when you hear shuffling of books from down below. Like, from back down, you hear the bookshelf being shuffled again down below.
So, again, the acoustics.
Oh, the acoustics are great. The acoustics are great.
If he's not stepping in this time... I'm going to vortex warp him into the center of that circle.
Hovering over the circle as like...
Pretty sure it's my cat.
No, I can... A pentadrone has ways of knowing. I am so, so sorry. We really got to... I thought I sent a clear... Let me go deal with this and then we'll be right back.
Okay. And the second she says that, vortex warp. Vortex warp you right into that circle.
I think the vortex warp, do you need a roll for that or does it just happen?
Yeah, so that's going to require a save. That is...
That is going to be, one second, vortex warp is a con save DC 15.
All right, that was a 19.
Oh, shoot. So I just like, I just put two fingers right to your chest. There's like this bong... As nothing happens.
You touch the pentadrone, and you watch your magic course over them, grab on, and you watch just this shimmer. The way the vortex warp usually works, it's almost like the creature is like made into a glowing mist and then shoved in the location, then reforms the way it ought to. It pushes back, and you watch a magical almost shell in that circle pop up and deflect the pentadrone back out. Give me a perception roll.
12 plus 4 is 16.
Wasn't your circle. The perfect circle fucking resonates and just stops. A wall prevents the pentadrone from going inside.
And as you see...
Now that's interesting. That's very, very interesting because, you know, the only magic in the universe I know that could create such a perfect circle. You know, I don't want to imply that your artwork isn't fantastic. I appreciate the touch of a non-lawful being as much as any beautiful creature would, but the only thing that could create such a perfect circle is, that's pure grade... Monodrone dusk. Now, which would imply that this was collected. I'm looking at the amount of dust here on the floor, and that implies that that's 10, 12 monodrones, the exact number that seems to have gone missing over the last few weeks, which implies that, well, they were here, they were gathered, they had made contact with someone who brought that dust into this room. Now, From my perspective, I am merely a small gear pentadrone trying to do his job. But as I see it, there's only one other person in this room. Well, you get one other individual. There are a lot more non-individuals now than there were, because I'm starting to suspect. Now, I don't mean to imply, but I'm starting to suspect that maybe, perhaps, something occurred here.
And this is when you hear you're hearing rearranging from behind you.
Right.
As objects in this room are now being rearranged behind you.
I would just kind of glance over my shoulder. What do I see behind me?
You see two quad drones, like talking at each other in Modron, a language that you fully do not comprehend. You see four tri-drones, walking up and down the staircase. You see eight duo-drones rearranging bookshelves, and you find, I think that you hear along the walls, 16 different skittering sets of, crawling footprints, or crawling sounds, all crawling along the outer walls of the building.
Well, clearly. There's been some misunderstanding.
Certainly there's been some misunderstanding. I believe that, the only thing is that I didn't pick up on it faster.
Now that you have figured out what you've come to figure out, I'll just be on my way, and I will leave you to your job.
As you start to move towards the stairs, you get an angle to see down. This was a three-floor tower, and it was just a pure, there's just this floor specifically for maintenance of the blades of the windmill. Then it's just a tall tower, no floors, and then the bottom is where all the grinding shit is, right? For actually processing wheat. When you see down the stairs, there is a second floor now. And you can see little bits of alchemical equipment. You see below you the lab of a wizard.
So they're putting it back together. Okay, I would then move to the window and look out the window. Are they also reassembling the town?
You can see scrabbling all over the outside of this windmill.
Just the windmill?
Just the windmill. And you see them dismantling the damaged blades and taking it down.
Interesting. So they're just fixing the windmill.
As far as you can tell.
Well, again, it seems like you have this well under control, and so you just kind of lean against the open window a bit, right?
And I think at that, the pentadrone steps forward.
Well, everyone else's job, the monodrone's job is to clean up and repair things. The duodrone's job is to repair the wizard's lab. The tri-drone's job is to make sure that the staircase is in order. The quad-drone's job, and my job, is to fix right what happened to the monodrones.
And with that, a green gas is starting to fill the room as it emerges from various facial cavities and flapping. I think that actually looking at the structure of this pentadrone and it starts to flap. It sort of flaps to kind of fill the room, kind of like...
Okay. She's going to leap out the window.
First, you're going to make a DC 11 constitution save.
I rolled a 3. A 3 plus 3 is 6.
It's now reaching a density, this gas, that you can smell just slightly sour, that you can taste a little bit. It's a little floral. And as you go to, pull back... You have your arms planted on either side of the window and they just stop responding. Your hands are outside on the outer wall and you're pushing yourself and you just freeze to the point where you're just leaning back. And there's a thought that goes through your head where you hear repair the wizard lab and you stop and your brain finally just interjects, this is a windmill.
Right. This is not a wizard's lab. This is a windmill.
The blades have been completely dismantled. The wood has been repurposed into scaffolding. And a fourth floor is being added to the tower.
So they're making it bigger now. Can I talk?
Jeff, your call. He's got the paralyzed condition. He's got the paralyzed condition, so like...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely can talk.
Okay, so like I'm just like kind of looking over, unable to turn my head. Seems you're making improvements.
The Pantadrone leans forward when you ask that and says,
I don't know what the Tri-Drones and the Duo-Drones are doing. We don't talk, you know, I don't know more than I assume you talk to a chair. I know what the three of us are doing in this room, and it's to make something right. Whatever the rest of the gang is doing to make right, that's really more on them than anything.
When this creature says three of us, who are they gesturing to?
There are the two Tri-Drones that have walked into the room.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which look like, if you picture a D6 with angel wings.
Well, I'm quite sure there's nothing I can help you with. I'm merely a...
I can't move my hands.
I am merely a agent of Waterdeep sent here with assignments and tasks, and I was fulfilling them as my... I was simply following orders.
Of course. Believe me, the Modrons understand orders better than anybody. I just don't see how murdering a bunch of Modrons was part of those orders, but hey, everybody's got a different process.
Well, I did... To be fair, I did not murder these Modrons. I simply gathered their ashes from various places and combined them for this ritual. It's more like grave robbing, really.
Of course.
Yes, it's not. I mean, it's a crime, but is it really hurt anyone?
Aram, I'm gonna have you roll me another Arcana check.
That's gonna be 8 + 4 = 12.
One of the things you're told about in just sort of the course of classes. You should expect to see this. You know, you're something like 250 years old. You're an adult elf.
Yeah.
The Great March is something you've been warned about. You've been told about Modrons. And you realize how fucking stupid what you said just now is. Because this is not a type of creature that gives half a fuck about fair.
Right.
There's a different word that matters here. And it's correct.
I think the Modron stands up, turns around.
Well, you two got a confession. A crime was committed. It might not be the murder, but a crime was committed, and we will act accordingly. Can one of the two of you handle the execution? Can the other tell me what exactly is going on in the rest of the building? Because obviously, I am a little bit lost. I appreciated the theatrics to get the confession out of the perp, but I feel like I'm missing a detail somewhere along the line.
Yeah, of course, Bob, boss. 6984-6923, if you...
And immediately, one of the Tri-Drones just sort of... In these shitty little trash angel wings, it looks like you grabbed a regular wing and pulled it and just stripped all the feathers off of it. Floats over and just is floating around with the pentadrone. And the other Tri-Drone lands. Walks over towards you.
Paralyzed.
And he grabs your legs.
Does that release me from being...
Oh, you can repeat the saving throw at the end of your turns. Yeah, so I'll let you know when your turn starts. The Tri-Drone grabs your legs at the ankles, lifts them, and allows leverage to do the rest of the work. Okay, so you're going to take 3d6 bludgeoning damage as you are hurled out a window.
Oh, all right. Wait, do I have any? Can I do anything?
You're paralyzed.
I've got meta magic.
You do. That's a fair point.
And I've got the ones where I don't have to do somatic stuff, where I can, like, you know what I mean? Like, where I can, like, do it without making gestures. So, could I spend a meta magic point and cast Featherfall?
Yes. That is actually, yeah, that is 100% fair. As you're going down, you can see the grand construction as floors are being added to the tower. And you can see that, like, there's a little bit of a sort of angular structure to a windmill, like it does, it's almost conical, It's been broadened out at the top. It's a cylinder now. It's just going straight up. It's got windows now. That's not supposed to be there, really.
Oh, wait. Wait a minute. He really liked the circle. And he's mad that I killed... Well, I did not kill the Motrons. I honestly did not. He's mad they're dead. He's mad I desecrated their ashes, sure. But he liked the circle. And they're building and adding to it. I think I may have done a very bad thing. And I'm thinking this during the 6 seconds it takes for me to glide to the bottom.
You can roll another con save now.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
I think as you fall, I think that the pentadrone, like, watches this, looks over at the quadrone, goes...
A punishment was dealt out to the crime. She had an ability that allowed her to get out of it. Technically, that's within the rules. We can't really be mad at that. That was a clever use of a meta magic feat. There's really not a lot that we can do in this situation.
I could shoot her with the bow. I mean, the punishment is she's supposed to get killed.
And the other quadrone just goes,
punishment was that we were supposed to try to kill her.
Well, it was that we were supposed to throw her out of a window to her death, and she was thrown out of a window, and she then magically survived that. That's that's some clever rule, some clever application of the rules, which, frankly, I gotta admit, I respect.
The one quadrant's just got the bow drawn, like, with an arrow knocked and drawn back.
I just wanted to...
Maybe next time.
I roll a 17 plus 3 is 20.
Okay, that beats an 11, yep.
So as I'm about 5 feet off, I just flip over and land like Black Widow, just right to the ground.
Did we find out what the others are doing to the tower?
Hey, could you figure out what they're doing to the tower?
And one of the tri-drones looks over and goes,
do you want me to...
And he turns to one of the duodrones.
You should figure out what they're doing to the tower.
And the duodrone, like, immediately sticks its head out and goes...
It's just telephone.
Hey, what the fuck are you doing?
One of the monodrones just scrabbles down and you get relayed back. It's like...
There's summoner magic. It's a wizard tower. Wizard towers don't got fans on them. It's clearly broken.
Fixing a broken thing. We love to see it.
I want to roll Arcana, and here's what I'm trying to figure out. Are they building a gateway back to Mechanus? That is going to be a 17 plus 4 is 21.
Well, they're definitely building a tower. You can't see inside of it, but the magic seemed to activate. It had weird interactions with the Modrons. Fuck only really knows what they're doing in there, but this is expansive.
Okay, the front door.
Yep.
Where is it pointed?
Let's say that you landed in front of the front door. Let's give you the convenient thing there.
Yeah. So where is it pointed? Like, when the million Modrons march out of the tower, where is the tower pointed?
Okay, you got over a 20?
Yeah.
You've got, like, 6 years.
Until they're done with the...
No, until, like, the Great March happens.
Until the Great March happens.
It happens every 289 years, and it's been 283 years. You have 6 years.
But they're building something. Okay, you know what? I don't know what to... I honestly, as a player, I'm not sure what to do. So what I'm going to do then, I think, is she's going to fall back into government mode, and she's going to take a step back, and she's going to message her boss.
You do a sending to your boss, because message has a range of like 100 feet.
I have sending, sorry. Yes. Yes, you're right.
25 words.
Oh, dear. Okay. Hey, boss. There is a problem. Modrons are here in great number, and soon there will be many, many more.
Five remaining.
Please send help now. Thanks.
It's important to end with a personal. It's important to end with some gratitude. That's a good. That shows good. That's good manners.
That's what I'm gonna send.
We'll get some jurors out tomorrow. Cordon off the town.
Oh, fuck. All right. Kicks a little rock.
No. That was like they will.
Oh, okay. I just spent another guy. Okay, fine. I'll spend another spell slot. God damn it. What should I do
in the meantime, there are many, many Modrons here, and they are building a weird magical tower. It's scaring me. Thanks, bye.
You work in the agricultural division. That's not your job.
Oh, you know what? Fine. I have gone above and beyond what I would normally do for anyone. I feel like I have done my job. I have clearly been given the okay not to. So while this continues in the background, I'm going to go draw some fucking plants and make some notes in my journal and just pretend like none of it's happening. That's what I'm going to do.
You fuck off. You just leave.
I mean, I'm like not far. Like all of the farms are right here because this is where the agriculture in, yep, you know, area was. So I'm like in the shadow of this thing the entire time it's being built as I'm making my little leaf drawings and cabbage notes.
Okay. Jeff, is there anything the Modrons get up to aside from the construction there?
I think that they build the tower continues to grow more and more massive. A day or so later, I think that, like, even... I think that what happens is the town is cordoned off, right? Like, the town is in lockdown.
Right. Yeah, abjurers show up and just do walls of force around the entire little town. Nothing is allowed to pass those walls.
Does that include me?
You didn't leave.
I think that what happens though is in the next day, like you are outside, like you are in the town, you are doing your business.
I've stopped drawing. I'm just sitting on a bench, mad now. They've locked me in here. I have gone into a shop and like there's like a surviving half of a surviving inn, and I've like got a few bottles of wine. I'm just sitting there, mad and half buzzed.
And what you see a day or so later is, you're half buzzed, you're walking around, and you see like another wizard, you know, a bundle of books, a big wizard hat walking.
Oh, hello.
You hear a clatter, you hear the clattering of dice, and you blink, and that pentadrone is standing in front of this wizard with two quadrones, and they have pierced the wall of force. You don't know how they have gotten in, but there they are. There's the three of them. And, You watch a wizard get shot with no less than 8 arrows immediately. Oh. You watch some Modron powder pour out of one of their pouches. The pentadrone turns, gives you a little salute with one of its face flaps, and then there's the clattering of dice, and they are gone again. A monodrone appears in the same thing. In the blink of an eye, they're there. They sweep up the Modron dust, and then they are gone again.
With every stroke into, like, the dustpan, whatever's left on the ground immediately forms another small circle. You go over and investigate. And this is just a random fucking wizard. You honestly have no idea who this motherfucker is.
Was, right?
Fair.
Because he's very dead, right?
Oh, I mean, very, very dead.
Severely dead. Okay.
Incredibly dead. 8 arrows worth of dead.
Right. I figured as much.
You check
okay.
his spell book, and he only ever got up to, like, Scorching Ray, so, like, 8 arrows is above and beyond what's necessary here.
Is he from Waterdeep? Is there any, like, paperwork?
Oh, yeah, no. This is a younger wizard. This is clearly, like, one of the colleges in town. And you cannot figure this out. Time passes.
Yes. Ugh.
The cordon gets dropped.
Okay.
You spend some time in town and you don't see the Modrons again.
Okay.
You spend days looking, investigating for signs, and eventually, just fuck it. Done. Leaving. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going.
Right.
6 years later, the Great March occurs. It never passes anywhere near Waterdeep, but there's rumors of a madman who keeps raving about how the Modrons are going to be coming specifically through Waterdeep. 100 years later, there is a decrepit old tower sitting in this town, and there are rumors of the mad wizard who tried to summon Modrons to destroy the world and failed, and now there's just this decrepit old wizard's tower waiting there. As you sit there and you hear them talk about, you know, this old wizard's tower and the grand summoning ritual that was supposed to bring about the Great March early, you occasionally stop. It was once you made the mistake. Once you said, it's not a fucking wizard's tower. It's a windmill. They broke it.
I am in the bag and I would just like slam my fist down. It's not a wizard's tower. It's a goddamn windmill.
As they're going around, putting drinks on the table,
don't
just
you,
leans in and goes,
don't you cut me off. Don't you cut me.
Don't worry about her. She's the crazy one.
And they just go back behind the bar.
I would take my white wine and I would crate 3 ice cubes. We'll drink it.
And that's the end of your career.
Thank you for joining us for the Modron. For more information about us, notes for each episode, and ways you can help support the show, head over to killeverymonster.com.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEM Podcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/deadghostpro.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. Our guest was Jeff Stormer. You can find him on Twitter at partyofonepod. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.